Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, today's date is April 17th, 2009. It's about 12:47 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I'm talking to Winston Wu. Winston Wu owns a website called happierabroad.com. That's happierabroad.com, all one word. And this is actually the third time I'm interviewing him. The first interview that I did with him was on March 27, 2009. Came out, or the Skype recorder messed up the recording. So I have a list in front of me of all the questions that I had previously asked him. We're going to go down the list, and we're going to basically re-record that interview, and that way you can hear it loud and clear. Winston, it's good to have you aboard.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Well, let me start out with the first question I'd asked you. And first of all, I know you're operating a website that's regarding it's basically designed for men who live in the West, particularly the United States, that are sick and tired of the fact that it's nearly impossible to even get an average woman today without her having 50 to 100 options. And, of course, with it goes the bad behavior. I wouldn't say that's always the case, but dating is obviously a dilemma today for millions of, or hundreds of thousands at the very minimum, of men out there. So tell me, what was your life like as a teenager and a young adult, and how did this adversely affect your ability to date?
Well, it definitely played a role in all this, because I didn't really fit in to my school and the culture, and I wasn't that popular, so I didn't really get a lot of dates and felt a little excluded, and I've always felt really lonely because of that. And in fact, I wrote a story about that on my website called my personal story, 20 years of loneliness and datelessness in America that led me abroad.
Wow.
And but plus I was a shy, timid guy, so that was also a factor. But when I grew up, I started being more confident and outgoing, but by then it was too late, because the culture had become more man-hating and more feminist, and I grew up in Silicon Valley, which is all about work and isolation, so it wasn't that open of a place. And I was an Asian guy that liked white women, so it just wasn't, and you know, the white women there, you know, preferred their own race, so it just wasn't a very good market for me, and that led to many years of frustration, and until I went abroad, and then everything turned around 180 in so many ways, and yeah, that's what inspired me to start this movement called Happier Abroad.
Well, I want to say something, Winston. You talk about Silicon Valley. I read an article about that recently. The place is a sausage fest off the Richter scale. There are so many horny guys going there. Of course, it's like going out west. Oh, I'm going out there to discover and digging for gold or panning for gold. And they said that I read an article that was saying that if you go out to like a cafe, it's mostly men. So there is a lot of challenges going out west to meet women. It is a sausage fest.
Oh, definitely, and there's a lot of guys there in the same situation as me, not just Asians, but white
right.
guys too, and a lot of these guys complain, but a lot of them are afraid to, because you're not supposed to, you know, complain about such things in the States, because, you know, there's kind of a double standard where women can complain about men, but men aren't allowed to complain about women, because it's politically incorrect, yeah.
The typical follow-up you hear from most guys is, why don't you just admit it, you're a woman hater? That's all that – it's almost like a self-defense mechanism. It's like it's like criticizing the president, George Bush, former President George Bush, and saying, why don't you just admit you're a liberal? It's like it's almost like a defense mechanism that they use, and it's got nothing to do with hating women. I think that one thing I've touched on several of the audio podcasts I've done since we first did our interview was that this is such a taboo subject. No guy is ever going to go out in public. I've tried to get the Love Shy forum to interview with me. I did get two guys. The Incel forum, I've never really checked that out too much. From what I'm hearing is none of these groups of people really want to talk about this issue. They just want to maybe have their cyber chat and cry to each other on the internet. But this is a taboo subject that needs to be broken.
Definitely. And the worst thing about it is that a lot of – I mean, the guys that are suffering from this I mean, there's a lot of guys suffering from this, and they have no voice. This is a politically incorrect taboo subject, and they don't really have any solutions. If they complain, they're told by their friends to improve themselves, to be more confident, to go out there and do stuff, and to stop complaining. But that really doesn't solve it, because there's so many inequities in the U.S. dating market that just guarantees that there's a lot of guys that are going to be left dateless, lonely,
right?
Just not having any companionship, and also there's a lot of, you know, women that are not even looking. I mean, they'd rather go shopping or walk their dogs or go jogging and just not even be with men, because
right.
they're taught that they don't need them. So there's a lot of men that need women, so they're kind of left out in the open. I mean, left out in the cold. I mean.
Right.
And that's a pity, because there are very few people giving these guys real options, you know,
right.
other than pickup techniques and cliché-ish techniques like improve yourself, go to the gym, join some activities,
yeah, but...
you know, and that might get you some superficial acquaintances, but it really doesn't turn your life around.
Right. Winston, I will say one thing. The gym is a big asset. If you go to the gym, like I'm a marathon trainer. I primarily do treadmill training, and I do some cross training. Like I'll do sit-ups, and maybe I'll lift a little lightweight here and there. But a woman does respect a guy more if he's weight training or if he's working out than she would if he's at a bar. So there is hope for training, but it is there's several factors that go against guys today in the dating game. Is that I have a strong belief that there are more guys competing than there are women, because I've done research on articles that say that the ratio of single men in our generation, like Gen X, is like Generation X is like 2-1. So you have a lot of women out there that just have so many options, and then they got bad attitudes too, because I see girls that are not so great looking that have they have 10 guys fighting for them within my visible range. They might have more if I didn't know the other people they knew. You know, it's like it seems like it's a situation that's hopeless for men. I don't want to say it's hopeless, but every time I see a guy with an average to good-looking woman, I'm always saying to myself, either he's got money or he's the chosen one. He was chosen by her. I know it sounds like a state of despair, but do you ever think that?
Oh, definitely. I've seen that all the time, and a lot of my friends have said that too. I mean, there's just a lot more guys looking than women, and you can see this on the internet personals. For example, if you go to Yahoo Personals or Match.com, there's a lot more guys than girls, and all the girls get so many letters every day from guys, and the guys hardly ever get letters back to them, and it's completely one-sided, and it's just not fair. But then again, you're not allowed to complain about it.
And then you got these guys that are like my what I call now, I've learned a new term. It's called bootlickers, and basically it's these guys that will lick a woman's boot. It's like kind of like they'll do anything that a woman says, even on these forums that are designed for guys that can't meet women. Anytime a woman posts in there and says, "Oh, you guys don't have confidence," these guys stick up for the woman. There are no men that really have a backbone. When push comes to shove, men don't have the camaraderie that women have, and unfortunately, we're in the situation we're in today. Let me go off on question number two, so I don't get distracted here. What made you come to the conclusion that dating in the United States was all messed up and rigged against the male? And then I put, why didn't you just conclude that maybe you were the one with the problem, not everyone else? And I put in parentheses, this question is raised by most guys. This is raised by most guys in their heads when they are dateless, because sometimes we imagine that maybe we're the reason why we don't have dates. Did you ever conclude that maybe you were the reason?
Oh, definitely, for sure. And those are great questions. For many years, I thought I was the problem and that I had to change something to make myself, quote unquote, dating material to women. And I just didn't understand what I needed to do. I mean, obviously I can't change my height or race. So I thought, you know, if I'm a great, likable guy, why can't I get any women? And so I kept looking for these answers. And I would ask my female friends and other friends, and you know, they didn't really have any answers, because they didn't really know. I mean, or they just give me the same cliches, you know, like you got to look cool or act cool, you know, And so I tried all these cliched advices and some of the pickup artist books, and they just didn't do anything. And plus, they tried to make me feel like something that I wasn't, and it felt totally unnatural. And I just felt like I was trying to force something that didn't want to be, and it was just more frustrating than you can imagine. And to answer your question about what led me abroad, I mean, basically it was repeated failures and frustrations. And I always believe that because I have this really strong willpower, and when I fail, I don't feel like a loser or a failure. I use it to learn something, you know, something from it so that I can benefit from it. And eventually I learned that the dating market was better for me overseas, and that my life could be turned around, and that's exactly what happened. But basically, to give you an idea of the big picture, it's basically like this. In the U.S., I find someone to date maybe once every few years.
Right.
And a lot of guys are in that situation. And then when I find that person, it either lasts a few weeks or a few months or maybe 1 year or two. But, you know, but then I have to – if that relationship ends, then I have to wait another few years. And then I basically got, you know, hundreds of days of being dateless again, which was excruciating to me because this is a high priority to me. Whereas overseas, when I find that the women in a lot of countries – not in every country, of course, but a lot of them are very open and friendly to me and treat me really well, and I'm always in the dating game where I have lots of choices. I mean, the choices couldn't be more obvious. It's either, you know, one date or girlfriend every few years, or at any given point in time overseas, I can have many choices, and then I feel like I have the upper hand, just right. Like the American women do in America. And, you know, there's just no contest there.
Well, yeah, you know, the thing about it is I think you're right on the money, because I've had a few situations that happened to me maybe in the last year where a woman showed genuine interest and maybe I could have taken it to the dating thing and pushed it further. But it becomes like a hit and miss thing, because years ago, 50 or let's say 60 years ago or 50 years ago back in the 1950s in America, you had so many options. If you were a single guy, women would say basically, or people would say, you know what, I know this right girl for you. We could set you up on a blind date. And you had options. Well, nowadays, if you're a guy living in this dating game, you're almost like, I'm fortunate, fate had it that this one girl likes me. But what if it doesn't work out or she's not your type? Well, then wait, you got to wait another 2 years for that same situation to play itself out. And women almost totally have the choice. By the way, a lot of guys, I had one guy criticize me for this. He says, my criticism of you, Steve, is that you keep saying that women have all the choice and you're corrupting them because a lot of women don't believe that. Well, I agree that might be true to some degree, but most women do know they have the choice. And since the value of the man today in the dating game is not nearly as much as the woman, as reflected by online personals like 50 responses to a guy's zero responses, it stands to reason that men have to have other options. And I think that's where you're standing.
Oh, definitely. And it's any decent looking woman has a lot of choices. I mean, the reason they deny it is because they're saying they don't have, you know, choices between alpha males or Prince Charming or their ideal guys. That's what they're saying. They don't have choices there. But in terms of just nice, friendly guys, they're everywhere. They're asking them out. They're hitting on them. They're constantly flirting with them and wooing them. And you know, I see this with my female friends too. They claim they don't have choices, but everyone's hitting on them.
Right.
And it's obvious what they're talking about. They're coming from a different point of reference.
Right.
They mean like they're talking about their perfect, you know, Prince Charming type of guy. Those are what they consider choices, not average, friendly, good guys, you know.
Right.
So
well, I was going to say, Winston, that's a good point there. Now, let me ask this question. This is question number three I put on here. We kind of recap some of the stuff we talked about. Do you believe that overall, all men, with the exception of these alpha male, narcissistic alpha males, are adversely affected by the way things are today? Do you think maybe there's a psychosis going on with men? The over preponderance of men playing video games, going to the bar, saying I'm there to watch the game, when in reality they're trying to meet women. Do you think that there is some sort of psychological change amongst mainstream men today that maybe are not aware of this directly, but this dating game somehow is – like I see so many guys, Winston, that don't have girlfriends. And of course their typical response is, well, I don't want a woman. They're too much heartache. Well, the real reason is they can't get one. Do you think that this is creating a weird dynamic in our culture where people are just like frustrated?
Yes, that is one of the psychosis in our country, which is, I mean, men generally, you know, like to be with women. They like to date with them, and some only like them for sex, of course, but many, you know, like them for companionship as well. And you know, but at the same time, you know, a lot of guys can't get women, so. But they would never admit that, so they cover it up. So by saying, "Oh, I don't need them," or I have a lot of them. They all want me, but I blow them off, you know. Because, I noticed that among guys, Western American guys tend to brag about these kind of things, you know, as a sign of insecurity, to cover up their insecurity or something. But I wanted to make another point. In your previous question, when you asked if I felt that if I was the problem rather than society, once I went overseas and realized that, you know, the women, I could get more dates, and the women, I had more choices, and the women were just more and more feminine, and I felt more and more fulfilled and fun, and things were more open. Then I realized, If I'm the problem, then how come I don't have this problem in other places?
Right.
So it goes both ways. Yeah. Based on that, you know, I could say, well, my environment was the problem because I don't have this problem in other places. So that logic, you know, that the complainer is always the problem, cuts both ways, actually, too. But
yeah.
That's kind of an important point, yeah.
Yeah, it sure does get frustrating. But I guess so then you realize that going overseas, that dynamic changed. Speaking of the, I'm going to get really heavily into this. I mentioned alpha males. I don't know too many alpha males, only occasionally I've run into some guys that are jerks that seem to always say that they don't have problems with women. But what do you think the percentage of guys out there that can get basically a woman anytime? I mean, when you think about this, if you're a guy that's in the 80% range of guys that don't meet women, the chances are highly unlikely that you're associated with an alpha male in your group of friends. Where do these guys hang out, and where are these guys that are obviously – it's this 10 or 20% of the men that are boinking or sleeping with 80% of the women out there. I mean, I know that sounds like an exaggeration, but it's pretty much a known fact that there's a minority of guys. Who are these guys, and what walks of life? You know, they're not all rich, by the way. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, to be honest, I haven't known very many alpha males too, but statistically, I mean, they're in the top 10 or 20%, and I'd guess based on the criteria of looks and money, they would be the people who are the most attractive or the most rich. For example, Hugh Hefner or Tom Cruise or people like that. But even if you're not a movie star, if you have a certain charisma and you have a great social network and you're just at the top dog in your niche, that also creates a position.
Yeah,
but it depends on the groups you move in and the things you're associated with. I mean, if you're in a band, for example, then you get a lot more exposure and a lot more access to women and stuff. But the majority of guys aren't, you know, cut out for that kind of stuff. So
right. I think it boils down to the fact, or one of the things that it boils down to, is these alpha males are out there. But when you run into these women that are chronic daters, well, I'm dating this guy, I'm dating that guy. When they say they're dating this guy, a week later they're dating that guy. I think what they are in fact doing is dating the alpha males, but we just don't personally know these guys. Because what I have found out to be a trend is when these sexually loose women sleep around, usually it's the guy that doesn't call them back. And it's, and of course, if these guy, if some nice guy were to be lucky enough to get to sleep with one of these girls, he would not be the type to dump her. So it proves to me that the promiscuous women are in fact only sleeping with this minority of guys out there, because if the guys are the ones not making the phone call back, then they are the ones that are saying, well, screw this, I got 50 other options, I don't need this woman to, you know, to get laid tonight or whatever. So it almost seems like the pattern with these women that are chronic daters is they are in fact dating these alpha males, or screwing them, I should say.
That is a very likely possibility. They definitely have very high standards in whether you want to call them alpha males or not. I mean, it's definitely a small percentage of men that get a lot of women, and most guys probably eventually settle
right
for someone, or they settle early on with a high school sweetheart.
Well, that's not settling. I don't think that's settling. If you're married to your high school sweetheart for 30 years and you've had a happy relationship, I think that's admirable. I mean, knowing that there's the, let's face it, the most structured marriages. I know, Winston, I know a lot of people want to have multiple choices, but if you think about it, from a societal point of view, the most happiest marriages are the ones that last, where there's good sex, good, you know, children in the marriage, because you got the whole package. You don't have to be concentrating on chasing a woman all the time.
Yeah, for those guys, I mean, more power to them. I didn't mean perhaps settling was the wrong word for those guys. I mean, they found their love early on, and they're happy, and that's fine, and they probably have some problems behind closed doors. But I mean, that those aren't the guys that my website is targeted toward, because they're living the ideal suburban life and American dream, and having barbecues every Sunday, and watching football games, and going to PTA meetings. I guess they have a comfortable life, you know.
Right.
It's not really a life that I want, because
I understand.
I have a traveler kind of person, and being
right
locked up like that. It's,
and you know what, Winston? Honestly, I don't think that it's such a bad thing to want to have multiple choice if the women both agree with that. I think that there's a lot of people that have criticized you. The typical thing I hear from people that criticize you, Winston, is the fact that you want to have multiple choices. Well, you know, I personally don't think that that option. See, there's one kind of flaw. There's only kind of one problem with the promiscuous lifestyle, Winston, and this is fact. Promiscuity has ultimately led to women having the choice of picking the minority of men. See, because this one guy that posted this video on YouTube, he was making a very good point. He says, in a sea of promiscuity, you have all these loose women and all these horny guys. But he said, in the end, the men lose, because those promiscuous women only settle for 10 to 20% of the for the men. So the biggest problem that I have with having all this choice and all the sexual choice is that inevitably it affects men more worse than men. Than it affects women. So in reality, it almost makes sense that maybe if a guy goes overseas and he finds a good Filipino woman, he should just stick with that woman and hopefully, you know, spend the rest of his life with her.
Well, I mean, it's different strokes for different folks. I mean, when I have choices in the Philippines, not all of them are marriage material, yeah. But, I mean, there are some that are nice and sweet that would make a really good long-term mate that I could have. I mean, I just don't, you know, choose to go that route.
Right.
But some guys do, and they're happy, and more power to them. But
right,
the Philippines is wonderful in that, I mean, the girls are very open there and friendly and very hospitable. That, I mean, you can find all types. You can find the types that are loose and that you can just sleep around with them. And you can find nice Catholic girls that you know, have good values too. So
right.
It's kind of like the best of both worlds.
Right. So are there, like in the Philippines, are there sexually loose women too?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you find them in the bars. You find them in nightlife. And,
right.
And there's a lot of women in between too. But it just seems like, I mean, when I meet a girl there, more often than not, she tells me she doesn't have a boyfriend. Whereas in the States, every girl I meet tells me she has a boyfriend, even
right,
if she doesn't. So, and because that's the most common blow-off line, or they'll give you a number and screen off your calls or something back
right
in America. So it's just,
yeah,
you know, which has happened to me thousands and thousands of times without end. So.
Yeah, so like if you're a, if you're an American guy and you go to a bar in the Philippines, are you? Is it almost a guarantee that women will start talking and hitting on you?
It's a guarantee that some will. Which ones do depends on their taste, because some of the girls there like white guys, some of them like Asian guys, some of them, you know, it depends on their taste and how you vibe with them. But there are so many single women there that, I mean, there's going to be someone for everyone. Even if you're fat and bald, as long as you have a nice personality, you'll still find, I mean, that'll still count for some of them. They'll still always be some of them that like you, because you know how attractive or how handsome a guy is there is not just his looks, it's also his personality and the way he carries himself and how kind he is toward people and women.
Right.
So over there you don't have to be overly macho or masculine, right, or anything like that. You can be just a nice, sweet, decent guy, and that'll be enough for a lot of women.
Right. Well, I mean, like, what can a guy expect if he goes, like, and you mentioned the Philippines because I guess it seems the most popular hotspot for a single guy, but what can he realistically expect when he goes there? Okay, you get off the plane. Do you have to really plan this ahead so you know where you're going?
You can plan ahead. I mean, having a plan is a good foundation as long as the plan is flexible and adaptable, because I mean in reality most things don't go according to plan, so mm-hmm. It's just good to have as a foundation. Just don't expect it to be set in stone, but you can do it either way. I mean you can arrange to meet some women off the internet first, you know, but you don't have to, because it's really easy to meet women in public there without using the internet.
Right.
Or you can just go there and you know, see what happens, and often, you know, something will happen. But yeah, it just feels very fluid and natural, like part of the flow, like
right.
It's almost a dating paradise. But every country has its pros and cons.
I mean, right.
I mean, you'll notice that when you go there, the streets aren't as clean, things aren't as efficient. And
I don't think Winston. I think that if a guy goes there that's sexually starved or romantically starved, the furthest thing from his mind is whether or not the streets are clean. I mean, that's the way I would look at it. I would see it from the perspective of what ultimately is this going to do for my dating life. And so my question is, if you're a guy and you go to the Philippines and you want to meet women, is it possible – and then I thought about this weird scenario. Is it possible that you could be treated with the same reception as that American women would treat you? In other words, you'd be in the same boat as you were in the States, or is it unlikely because of the atmosphere?
Well, no, you definitely wouldn't be in the same boat as in the States, not by far, definitely not. It's like a completely different universe. I mean,
right.
The girls just have this very positive, enthusiastic, warm attitude that's really lacking in the States.
Right.
And in fact, a lot of guys make the mistake of committing very early to the first girl they meet in the Philippines, and then they get locked, and then they see someone better, but you know, they're already taken. So,
yeah.
You know, and then they regret it later on. This is a very common mistake with Western men. So me and my advisors always advise people to take a few weeks, you know, and get to know the place and date, meet a few women before you settle on one of them. I mean, if you're the settling type, that is. But some guys are and some guys aren't. It really depends.
Right.
Well, every situation is different. But definitely, I mean, it's just so much better over there. And once you're over there, you start to wonder, well, why didn't I come before? Where have I been all this time? And
yes, it almost makes you want to cry, because you'll be saying to yourself, what, you know, what's been going on? And you know what I love about your articles, Winston? You have such a great command of the English language. I read one of your articles on the Russian Love site, and it was Elena's Models or something like that.
Uh-huh.
You had an article that they had posted, and you said something about, you know, thank God American – the world – you know, everybody thinks that women are like this everywhere in the world, and you said thank God they're not. You have such a good way of expressing the reality of the way things are. And I think it's great that you do. And for people that don't like you or don't like maybe the fact that you don't want to settle for one woman – I would beg them to at least read your articles and understand where you're coming from, because a lot of people don't know how to articulate in words the way you've put things together. They have to go to your happierabroad.com, read about what this is all about, because if they don't, then they're just going to make prejudgments based on just all the nasty stuff people say about you. So that's all I'm here to say.
Well, yeah, I wrote that article a long time ago, and I still think most of it still applies today. It was about Russian women, why they weren't desperate to leave their country
Exactly. Everybody says they want to leave their country. That's a crock of baloney. They don't want to leave their country. A lot of women in Russia have white collar jobs working in scientific departments. That is a line of that. You know, first of all, one of the things I've heard with Russian women is a lot of them get homesick and want to go back to Russia. If anything.
Yeah, that definitely – that happens. I've heard all kinds of different stories. I mean, there are a certain percentage that want to go to the U.S., but it's not the majority.
No, it's not the majority for sure.
Think. Yeah, I mean it just looks that way because it's on the news a lot and people have that perception. Plus we're told that America is where everyone wants to come to.
Yes, exactly.
And it used to be that a lot of people did want to go there, but they were going there to make money, not because of freedom or escaping fascism or something like that. I mean, that was all propaganda. Most, if you ask immigrants, most of them will tell you they came because of money-making opportunities.
Yes, that's all they came for. And if you look at the history of immigration to this country, especially the ones that visited Ellis Island, like people from Russia, people from Germany, Ukraine, Poland, the only reason they came here was because of economic reasons. And it's insane to believe, for example, that if my relatives, for example, came from Italy, that my relatives now are living in shambles. People just as much enjoy Italy being living there as they would if they lived in if they had not or whether they had come here or not. I think people came here at the time for economic reasons. So I think that there's a big myth here that like America's the freest country in the world and everybody else eats dirt in the street. That's not true. There's a lot of beautiful places to live in the world that people just are not aware of. And it's just amazing how we've been sucked into this paradigm of thinking that everybody wants to come here.
Yeah, definitely. And what I found is when you leave America and see it from the outside – And you know, hear other perspectives and the other, you know, how the media views America in Europe, for example. I mean you see America a lot more clearer than when you're inside of it. And it's like that in general, because when you're inside of something you can't see it as objectively as when you're outside of it. And things start to become a lot clearer. Once you're outside of something, right. you get the bigger picture of the world, and you see a lot more to compare it to. And I mean, every place has trade-offs, pros and cons, and you see a different set of trade-offs. For example, in other countries, you might not have the money-making opportunities in America, but you have a much better social life.
Yeah,
people are much more warm.
Yeah,
and a quality of life. The friendships are stronger. There's a better sense of camaraderie.
Right.
And you just feel more connected to everything. And so there's a better inner life and a better – you just have a better and a more natural sense of self and self-worth. And whereas in the States, I mean – In a lot of places, especially in the suburbs, you're isolated and the neighbors don't talk to you. You know, they might give you a fake smile once in a while, but they don't invite you over as much or involve you in their life. And you kind of feel like you're isolated and not able to connect with others. And when you don't have a lot of true friends and you're depressed, the only thing you can do is go to a psychiatrist or therapist and get medicine and that's why, you know, so many people, like I heard, like half the population of the U.S. has gone to a therapist at some point in their lives, that's because they just don't really have any true friends.
Yeah, and you know what amazes me is like this whole thing about living a life of sexlessness or datelessness. People say, well, people like that need therapy because they got to deal with it. But in reality, why should a person have to get therapy for something that it should be a right, that it's not their fault? In other words, if you're a guy and you're frustrated with the dating scene, why should you have to go to a therapist to get it resolved when it's not fair in the first place, when you can just as easily get on a plane and go to the Philippines or somewhere and find that there are women that treat you like a human being? So that's insanity. I mean, it's almost like saying, you know, it's like blaming the rape victim and saying, well, you need therapy because you were raped and poor old you, instead of prosecuting the son of a bitch or a person that does it. It makes no sense. So yeah, I think it's people need to step out of those paradigms. They don't need therapy. They need to know that there are other options available, and you're of course giving those options. Which brings me to this next question. In your opinion, are there other things that guys can do? Let's say a guy does not want to leave the States, okay, and he's going to stay in the United States for the rest of his life. Can he enhance his dating life beyond the foreign market, or is he going to be in the same situation all the time?
Well, it depends on a number of factors. I mean, it depends on who he is, what he's got, what he's looking for, and where he is, because, I mean, different parts of the States, you know, vary too. And it depends on the groups he's with, you know. But in general, it's difficult because people are isolated and they have this independent mentality where they don't need others, which creates a psychosis, because deep down people need others and they need companionship, they need friendship. But at the same time, you're told you're independent, you need to be self-reliant and you don't need other people. So it's kind of a contradiction in that. Is one of the things that creates a psychosis, because you're believing in two contradictory things without realizing it. As far as what he can do, it just all depends. I mean, the best thing I would recommend is to find what you love to do the most, get involved into that, do that,
right,
and then you'll shine brighter, you know, when you shine the brightest when you're doing what you love.
Right.
And then hopefully, you know, you can make a living out of it and find the people that share those interests and establish those connections. And if nothing else, you know, you'll get a lot of friends that have share a kindred spirit with you, because
I think that that option makes the most sense. I broke it down into three channels of how a guy can meet a woman, almost guaranteed. He either can A, become very wealthy independently and become rich, which is a no-brainer. When you have money, people respect it. It's power, it's authority. The second thing is to get a hobby or an interest that you can share with women. Like, I'm a runner, for example. I'm a long-distance runner. Get a woman that does triathlons. Find a woman that likes to groom horses. Let's say if you're into horses or dog training. That's a good way. In fact, that's the most common way that a lot of people meet their other significant other. And the third way is to go overseas and find a wife, because if you think about it, for a guy to be an average Joe in today's American, it's very difficult to be just Mr. Joe Average, like the nerdy NASA engineer. Like back in the 50s, you'd see these pictures of these nerdy guys with pop bottle glasses, and they'd always have a beautiful wife and children. But now you see it, it's that, like, now the nerd is relegated to a life of being single, so it seems. So you almost have to either be, like, if you want to stay in the United States, the only two choices I believe you have is either to become filthy rich and have a lot of confidence, and because of that, or you're going to have to get actually, you don't even need confidence if you're rich, but you're going to have to get yourself involved in something that is involves a lot of women as well.
Yeah, and basically the bottom line is the odds are still, you know, slim. They're still going to be against you. There are things you can do to up your percentages, like improve yourself, get nicer clothes, nicer hair, or join groups, or get involved in activities, you know, take yoga classes, cooking classes, swing dance classes to meet women. I mean, there are very easy ways to meet people. There's no doubt about that. But the real problem is, even if you're meeting people and you get to know a lot of women in your daily activities, if you're not their type, or if they don't see you as their type, they're just going to see you as a friend or an acquaintance. They're still not going to date you. I mean, that's just the reality. It just depends. I mean, if the odds are heavily stacked against you, raising your value and your odds by a little bit, and, you know, meeting people, it might, you know, get you more active, but it's not necessarily going to get you the results you want. I mean, if you're an average looking guy and you want someone that looks like a model, for example, that's not going to do it. You have to go where the market will give you the status.
Yeah, so but let me throw my two cents in there. Most guys are not looking for models or looking for average plain Janes just to get rid of their sexual frustration. And even that's a brutal market, because a woman who's a plain Jane in today's dating market, if she's got a nice hiney and a set of boobs, She's premium. She's like premium merchandise. I'm not kidding you when I say this. I see average looking women all the time, and they might have a mildly nice body or an average body, but if they're clean and they take a shower and they brush their teeth and they're somewhat good hygiene, they've got lots of options. I've never believed. I think we live in an era where the woman's value sexually or romantically is like 20 times that of a guy. So
yeah, well, I was talking about overseas. I mean, there are some countries where an average nice guy in the States can get girls that look like models.
Right.
I mean, I've dated girls that look like models in Russia and the Philippines, and my current girlfriend in the Philippines, you know, looks like a model too. So I mean, if you like model type girls, I mean, there are ways to get that, but usually it'll involve, you know, you leaving the country, unless you can find a way to propel your status in the States, like joining a band and then becoming famous overnight. I mean, that's one way to do it, but again, that's like playing the lottery. The odds are heavily against you, and why stay on the sinking ship or fight such astronomical odds your whole life? I mean, life is short, and it's better to go get what makes you happy or go to where it makes you happy
right
early on rather than wasting more time, you know?
Yeah, I know. Life is short, and then you have to look at the job situation. You just can't quit your job and go overseas for a year. Maybe, you know, if you had that creates a problem, so you got to make sure that you coincide your trip overseas with your workplace and you got enough money to do it. But the Philippines is pretty cheap, though, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. The cost of living is like a really small fraction of what it is in the U.S. But at the same time, there's not really any money-making opportunities in the Philippines. And that's the dilemma. That's why most of the guys that live there are already retired on some military pension, or they have some business back in the States, or they can afford to make some an investment and start a business in the Philippines. But that can be really risky. Or if you get a TEFL degree or a TESOL degree, then you can pretty much teach English in any foreign country where they need English teachers.
Right.
So, I mean, there is a challenge there. But like I've always believed, where there's a will, there's a way. So if you really want something bad enough and it's important to you, then you'll find a way to do it.
Right.
One way or another.
That's true.
It might involve, you saving up a lot of money in the States over a long period of time before you can do it, or only taking two-week vacations per year, or even moving in with your parents for a while so you can save money as quickly as possible. But those are all ways that people use. Or you could, I mean, even get involved in some volunteer activities like the Peace Corps that'll
right
let you live overseas for a while. Or
yeah, that's true. You're right. And that's a good option to do that, because if you can have a job – like if you go overseas and let's say you're an auto mechanic and you teach people how to fix cars and they happen to, you might learn to speak the language, you could probably use your skills, because a lot of countries need technically skilled people to teach, for example. So you're talking about skills. There's so many options you'd have if you could get a job overseas. Like obviously American GIs that go to Germany, for example, there's so many of them that marry German women. And why is that? Because it's the proximity. They're already there. They might as well find a German woman, you know?
Yeah, and there are different opportunities everywhere and in all sorts. You just have to look for them. You got to have faith that in the universe, you know, I kind of believe that things don't happen by coincidence. I'm a little bit new agey in that sense. But I believe that if it's really meant to be, something will happen within the universe or that'll allow it to happen eventually. Some coincidences will happen. It'll help you. It'll give you an opportunity. And I always believe that God doesn't close doors on you unless he opens others. So
right.
you just have to have faith and you know, put yourself out there and the right thing will come along as well as the right place, if that's meant to be, that is.
Right.
You know.
That's true. That's a good point there. What is your opinion of the pickup artist industry, or PUA for short? I put on here, do their tactics really work, or is it just another snake oil scam? And did this industry crop up because the dating dilemma of because men are facing this dating dilemma, or was it just an because of the internet? Because I have the opinion that the reason why the pickup artist community came about is because there was a problem in the first place; otherwise, they couldn't sell it.
Oh yeah, and if you look at other countries, like the countries in Europe, for example, I mean, they don't have a pickup artist community because, I mean, there's no need for that. I mean, people can meet women naturally, you know, by just doing what they love or doing day-to-day things, and that's mostly in America, and that's a further testament to the large number of frustrated males in America that are just out of the dating game. They don't get any women, they don't get any dates, and they're just lonely and they feel like failures. Personally, I've studied a lot of these pickup artist techniques, and I mean, they're either really fake and ask you to do something you're not, or they're based on really nice theories that don't really work out in real life.
Right.
But some are manipulative, and some are just basic conversation strategies that you can find in a book about conversation skills that you don't even really need. I mean, all those things might help you a little bit, but basically, if you're not her type, you're not her type.
Right.
They cannot create attraction where there's
no.
None. For example, there's a common technique. I mean, a popular pickup artist technique called being cocky and funny, which is the main theme of David D'Angelo's theme. And I found that if a woman already likes you, and then you're cocky and funny, that'll be more exciting to her, and you know, that'll add a little friction and chemistry to it and fun. But if she has no attraction to you, I mean, that's not going to do anything. That might just get a cheap laugh, but it's not going to create the attraction. So basically, like most of them, they work if they already like you or are on the borderline. But if you're not their type, then they really aren't going to do anything. And a lot of these pickup artists make these big claims, but you don't see any proof of their success. They don't.
Right.
You don't even know if they're even dating anyone. I mean, there's no proof that David D'Angelo can pick up women anytime, anywhere.
No. You know, they want you to take it for face value. In other words, David D'Angelo will talk about all of his exploits, or Carlos Zuma will talk about all these girls he's dated. But in reality, they never really prove it. They just – you take their word for it. Okay, this is just the way it is. And also, I was going to say about the pickup artist industry, it seems that a lot of the guys that are joining this are – even in worse situations that even guys like myself or you are, because some of these guys have never had a date in their life, and it's kind of like the last stand. It's like their last chance to ever, maybe if there's any chance that they can find somebody. It's a really manipulative market.
Definitely. And also, if you look at the fan letters or the feedback letters that David D'Angelo posts and some of the others, you'll see that they're all in the same style. The same writing style, and they don't. I mean, something just doesn't seem right about them. They don't really seem like genuine letters, even.
No, they don't. They don't, because. But I noticed that because it's one thing to edit letters that come in, but it seems like it's the same person saying the same thing from a marketing perspective. Because, like, most people have a certain style about their writing, whether it be typing or handwriting, that makes it identifies them as who they are, and it seems that the way. His newsletters are, there's just, it's almost too good to be true.
Yeah, and they all start out the same way, like, oh, Dave, you're really the man. I did this and it worked, and it's all, it always says that, and it comes out with the same style and the same tone, and there's just something awfully fishy about that. And I can see this because I get a lot of fan letters, and I post them on a page on my website. And if you read them, you can see that they're nothing like that. They all have different writing styles, grammar styles, and tones. And you can tell they're genuine letters because they're not BSing anything. They're just asking me a lot of – some of them ask really detailed questions. Some of them share their story. But no one is raving or – I mean I get compliments and stuff, but no one acts fake in my letters, and the grammar is completely different. The style is completely different. It's obvious that different people are writing them,
right?
And the font is different, and it's obvious that my letters are real. And so I'm used to getting, you know, a lot of these real letters. I've posted about 400 of them on my site now, and then when I see, you know, some of these pickup artist testimonial letters, I mean, they just look nothing like the ones I get. I mean, they just look like yeah, the same person or group of people just rehashing the same thing.
Yeah.
There are even some inside sources that from people that know them that claim that the letters are faked or something, because people don't talk like that in real life.
No, they don't.
It seems like a show. Yeah.
It seems like a big show too. And then the future of this, it seems like these guys are rolling in the cash. And thank God I never really bought their merchandise. I was donating somebody either. Well, actually, I did buy it used from one guy one time who got tired of it, so I gave him half of his money. I felt bad for him, and then I went out. It was Ross Jeffries' material, and it's so outdated now. It's like, here's what I wanted to say. The reason why I don't think the PUA stuff can work is because a woman makes up – when you meet a woman, okay, let's say you approach a woman at a grocery store or at a bookstore. If she's attracted to you, she will position her body in such a way that she's within a couple inches of proximity. And if you follow the PUA stuff, the only way it really works is if the woman is already attracted to you. You cannot force the attraction by being cocky and funny and arrogant or using pickup lines, because if they don't feel the connection, then all is null and void. So that's the big fallacy. So I've developed a system of my own where I basically, if I walk up to enough women, I can tell which ones are interested in me based on the proximity, the body language. And this is stuff that really PUA isn't teaching. They claim they are, but they're telling guys that you can convince a woman to like you when, in fact, she's not interested in you.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. And I mean, the attraction is really subjective and it's personal, and you just cannot fit into a formula or a technique. And a lot of it is subjective too. So it just does not work that way. I mean, they seem to be describing a fictional place or a fictional situation there. But in reality, I mean, the chemistry doesn't follow along those lines. And personally, I've never known anyone that's had their dating life completely changed or turned around by one of these, you know, PUA artists or websites or techniques or books. I mean, all the claims are you know, from the guy selling the stuff.
Yeah, I've never noticed. It's sold like a get-rich-quick scheme. Everything with the PUA industry is sold from the perspective that you'll have 5,000 choices and you'll just be this dating guru. I mean, it's just – it's madness. It's like a get-rich-quick scheme. It's sold under that same type of, you know, you can have the whole world. And that kind of is just – I think it's very sleazy advertising. Unfortunately, it works for people – or for some people anyways. You know, anyways, I had one other thing. I had another question here. I put, can having multiple hobbies permanently keep a man's mind off of women? And then I put on here, the Buddhist religion believes that unhappiness comes from desire and that ridding yourself of that desire will keep you from being unhappy. So in other words, could a guy literally get women off his mind and still find some sort of happiness if he doesn't go overseas or whatever?
Well, it's always good to have some hobbies to balance out your desires so that if you get disappointed in one area of life, the hobbies help balance out your interests. And also following, like I said, following your dreams and passions and interests help make you shine more. You have more – when you're doing what you love, the real you comes out. And when you're following your bliss, you have a lot more energy too, and you're a lot less lazy, because people are only lazy – when they're facing an oppressive system that they don't like.
Right.
Because no one is lazy when they're doing what they love. Everyone, you know, because the energy flows naturally, for example. But I mean, it's definitely good to balance out your interests to help make you a well-rounded person. And you can make a lot of friends, you know, by following your hobbies and doing what you love. But I'd say, you know, that it can be a good coping mechanism, but if getting, you know, if finding love or getting dates in general is a really high priority to you, then, you know, the emptiness from not having that is still going to come back to you over and over again. And why, you know, learn to cope with it or go to a therapist about it when you can solve it by with this technique of global dating? By going to places or around in other countries in the 200 mark countries around the world where you can get what you want. You know, it's better to be fulfilled than empty, I'd say. And as far as Buddhism, I think Buddha said, I mean, you can't get rid of your desire. The key is to not attach to it. Mm-hmm. But desire is part of human nature, and you can't just suppress it. That's not natural. You just have to let it be released in healthy ways. So that's basically what I'd say. But definitely having hobbies helps you, and it's good. You just have to find out what it is you're interested in, and it'll help expand your circle.
Right. Well, that's great. Well, listen, Winston, I'm pretty much all out of questions here, and I want to thank you once again. Oh, one last question I'll ask you. I had this. Uh-huh. I got to get this out. I put on here, do you think that there are hundreds of thousands of 40-year-old virgins or people in that age group, or let's say 30 to 40, and is that something that's just relegated to that movie, the Hollywood movie, The 40-Year-Old Virgin? Do you think that there are a lot of guys out there that are seriously have never been with a woman, and it's just so that nobody wants to talk about it?
Well, there's definitely – I mean, the odds are there's definitely a lot of those, or some of those more. But the thing is most of those type of guys don't like to draw attention to that. So,
right.
I mean, you're not going to hear about it publicly very often.
No,
because there's a big PUA community, which means there's a large percentage of guys that are frustrated and can't get any dates. I mean, it's definitely going to be likely that some of them are virgins or have never even had a girlfriend. And so from the email I get from guys that like my website, some of them even admit to me that they haven't had a girlfriend yet. I mean, so some of them have contacted me and admitted that, mm-hmm. though they wouldn't admit that in person or draw attention to it. So it definitely exists out there and probably more than people think. And that's a pity because there's a saying that most men live lives of quiet desperation, and it's sad that some people have to suffer in silence and in
right.
loneliness, and they feel powerless about it. And
right.
And that's what I hope my movement does is to help give them hope, help give them an answer, and give them a voice or an outlet. Whereas in most of society, they don't have that outlet or voice.
Thank you very much. Well, Winston, I'll tell you what. Just stay on the phone. I'm gonna sign off here, but today's date is April 17th, 2009. It's 1:44 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And thank you, Winston. And in the future, I will probably interview you again. And you have a great day.
Well, thanks for having me, Steve.
Bye-bye.
You too. Take care.